Joining me in the studio is Bobby King with R&R King Logging. And Bobby, I don't know where to start, okay? You must have a lot to be celebrating right now. You got the win against the Ducks. You got the Coach of the Year, right?
Well, I don't know. Did we get that?
Yeah, I saw Jennifer just posted it not too long ago.
I don't know. FBS Coach of the Year.
Got that one. You got the Operator of the Year. And you got a birthday.
Oh, my gosh. You know
what's going on here?
Yes, it's quite a day.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah, I tell people, my kids tell me that at this age that I've lost my filter. So I can get away with saying anything, which is good because sometimes it does happen. It happens.
Yeah, I know. Well, they kind of look at us as we get older and they're like, oh, okay, we understand.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's talk about Operator of the Year. I mean, this is something that you're not a stranger to. You've done this, I believe, one other time in the South and once in the North?
Yeah, this is our third time.
Third time.
Yeah.
You and I have talked before about the importance of responsible logging. Loggers have gotten a bad rap in the past. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, I'm not talking about you, but I mean in general.
Yeah, the industry.
The way people look at it.
Yeah.
They don't understand what goes on behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Explain a little bit of what you do over and above in order to make sure our forests stay healthy.
Well, first of all, getting this kind of award is good for R&R King Logging, but it's good for the industry. Because I think it opens up the eyes with the amount of publication, amount of information that goes out from this award by different companies like radio stations and TV stations and newspapers. People go, oh, I didn't really realize that they go to those extremes. So we do, as a company, to answer your question, our character, our reputation to us is huge. And I don't think we're the only ones that feel that way in the industry, but I know for a fact that R&R King Logging and everybody in the company has that same response to when it comes to our reputation. So I think the key to that is, one, first of all, I got to say my son-in-law, Dan Wagoner, is the main cog in the wheel, so to speak, because he's out on the ground. I'm not so much anymore. I'm more stay in the office and bid jobs and stuff. But Danny, my son-in-law, is on the ground talking to neighbors, talking to power companies. And that's what it takes to do these kind of special jobs, because it's critical that your neighbors know what's going on. It's critical that the power line company knows that you're close to the power line. And the way that we log, I'd say mainly is communication skills, because we talk to everybody. If we're up against like in this job, we're up against some private homes. We're up against another timber company's land base. So it was a communicative effort from everybody and contacting those people. We're going to be here. We're going to be doing this. This is how it works. We're clear cutting, which, by the way, and I've said this many times on your show before, clear cutting is a necessity on the Oregon coast and in the coast range because we grow Douglas fir, which is the most usable product that you can get from timber, and it grows better, and it's just the best to replant. So in order to grow a Douglas fir, you have to have sunlight because they're not shade tolerant. Now you take a spruce, a hemlock, whitewoods, they're more shade tolerant, and they'll grow in the shade like on north slopes. Douglas fir does not. So you got to prep your ground. And us going in and logging this job is a clear cut. But in that clear cut, there are stands of leave trees for our critters. There are leave trees sections in different areas we had to log around. We had to move our yard and come in from a different angle, which is none of that's easy to do. And I think the main thing about this job was the critical riparian that's in the bottom that we had to hang over the top of. And when you're skyline logging in a clear cut, you hang over these riparians and these creeks in the bottom. Sometimes you have to log logs on the back hillside, and it's important that you have that deflection. Otherwise, the clearance to cover over the, go over the top of those riparians and carry your logs over so you don't destroy the riparian. Here, there was not timber across the riparian, but we had to tail hold, anchor our skylines across the riparian, and to get the deflection to keep our lines from tearing that riparian down, we had to go real high. And the only way we could do that is to go to a road system on the very backside, which is out about 2,000, 2,500 feet. And we access that road to put equipment on to anchor our skyline. And then, of course, on this job, and I pride myself in this. I don't know how many loggers out there now use drones, but I'm sure there are more than just us. I know there are. And so we string our lines with drones, which is kind of state of the art. And it keeps us from stringing the cable down through the trees and then lifting it up and taking limbs off and breaking limbs on the trees. We string a nylon rope with lays on top of the trees, and then we run a piece of cable around with that nylon rope, and everything stays above the canopy in the riparian. And it protects everything. So this riparian on this particular job, which caught everybody's eye, was a huge riparian that you couldn't really get across in a boat or wade. And it was tide influence. So there was high tide. The water would be a lot higher, low tide. And of course, the riparian's got a lot of critters and fish and different things in it. So it was a real critical part of the unit to log, and we pride ourselves in really, really taking care of that riparian. And we did a drone photo that's on the link that shows the riparian. It doesn't look like anything's touched it. So we're pretty proud of that.
I'm guessing that having to do it that way is not the most cost-effective way to do it.
No, it's very expensive. Like I said, not many people have drones. We do. It's very expensive to have a drone, but it works and it does what we want it to do, like protecting these streams. And running a drone on some of our jobs, we'll be out 4,000 feet for tail holes. And in order to string your cables out, and I'm talking our small cable is 3/8, and it comes in 300-pound sections that you carry on your shoulder. And then it goes, that small 3/8 cable hooks to a 7/8 cable called a haulback. And then a haulback goes around and hooks onto the skyline, which can be 1 1/8, 1 3/8, depending on the size of the machine you're running. And it strings all this apparatus strings the different things around, like a clothesline, run around. And we have been out as far as 4,000, 5,000 feet, and it would take us 3-4 days to pack coils of haywire, sections of haywire, blocks and straps, and all these things on the back end, and then hand string that 3/8 cable in sections. But you connect the sections as you go down one side, then you go down the other side and connect them in the bottom. What took us 3-4 days to do that? With a drone, we do it in 17 minutes.
Wow.
So, and in those 3-4 days, you're tiring up the whole crew.
Yeah.
And the drone, we have a guy that works for us. I want to say kid, because he's been with us a long time and started when he was just a kid. His name's Travis Perkins, is our pilot for the drone. And the drone has to be regulated by the federal
aviation. Yeah.
And he had to go get take tests,
a license,
get a license.
Yeah. What's it, a 140 or 160?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but he had spent a lot of hours studying and got that license. So he's our main go-to guy for the drone. And the thing about the drone, you know, we run 5 different operations, cable towers, and we can go out and string those roads ahead before the machine gets there. So when we get there and raise our tower up, another 70 to 100 foot tall tower, then we would string our, normally in the old days, we'd string our cable to 3 or 4 days. Now we move in, rig that tower up, and we're logging in 4 hours. Time we rig the yarder up and our lines are already strung. So it's quite an invention. It's a plus for us and a plus for industry, a plus for the environment. And the neat thing about this job and the honor of winning this Operator of the Year is the State Department of Forestry did a great job of publicizing this award. And with sending out that link that shows what we did and we talk about it, a lot of people saw that, and I get messages from, we didn't have a clue. We didn't know you did that. We didn't know that you cared that much, or logging industry cared that much. We care on every job we do. And one person wrote a message to me saying the only thing that they forgot is to say that you do this no matter what job you're on, you know, the honor of getting Logger of the Year, because we pride ourselves in what we do. And it just happened to be this with the riparian was caught everybody's attention. But the whole thing is, it opened up a lot of eyes. You know, years ago we had a chamber after hours across the bay from Moe's on a hillside that we logged over there, and had four buses of people come over and explain logging. I think I've said this to you before, but when you have a lady come up to you afterwards and say, you know, I was one of those tree-hugging type people that hated logging, I understand now, and I really like the way you log. So that's what it's all about.
Well, and it's a renewable resource.
A renewable resource, yeah.
Now, maybe you know the answer to this, maybe you don't. What's the status of the Doug fir industry? Because I know on the supply side, they're having a real hard time getting, you know, lengths of wood, you know, like at the contractors and places like that. Are they logging enough Doug fir now, or is it mainly a supply and mill issue, or
you keep thinking when the fires went through and all the homes destroyed, hurricanes in the south, homes destroyed, there's a demand for lumber. What really was critical about getting trees is that after the fires, there was such a demand for the seedlings that people had to wait in line in order to get seedlings to replant their burned ground. And I'm talking private industry, because the government pretty well did not go in and replant the ground. They just let it go and come back natural, which if you look at the two side by side, it's night and day. Industry cares about their land. The government might care, but they don't do anything about it. And I can say that now because my filter's gone at the age I am, so I can talk about the government. But point being is, there was a demand for the seedlings when they've come about. So you plant seedlings a year ahead in a nursery, and then you buy seedlings to fit the classification of the area you're in. The coast seedling is different than what they plant in the Cascades. They grow those trees according to the classification of the area that you're going to be planting in, which a lot of people don't know. So they have to think ahead, and many years ahead, about what trees to plant or what trees to grow to go to the different areas. Well, when you have a catastrophic fire, man, 180,000 acres or whatever it was burned, right, that's a lot of trees to replant. And so they're in line. You have a state law is you have three years to replant your ground after you log it or fire comes along. And I have to say, too, on the private ground after that fire, private industries went in and harvested those trees and utilized the trees as much as they could. And most of them, when they have a fire, burn the sapwood, but the heart of it's good for lumber. So that's salvageable lumber. Private industry, private landowners went in and harvested. Government did not. The other part of that is when you have to plant that many trees, you have to get the trees and then you have to have the laborers to plant those trees. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you're in tree planting, the timber industry, McDonald's or restaurants of any kind or any kind of business, help is almost impossible to find. We're fortunate because we're pay good and we keep our men busy and pay good benefits. So we could always use more, But it's very hard to find help.
And I imagine kids nowadays are more interested in doing this with their thumbs than getting out and working hard.
I have to tell you, George, to find a young man who wants to run up and down those hillsides, and I'm talking steep hillsides, 2,000 feet to the bottom, 2,000 feet up the other side, all kinds of weather, wearing rain gear, and these guys come out of that bottom ground, the choker setters and rigging slingers and hook tenders. I don't care what kind of weather, they're wringing wet. And they're not wringing wet from the rain because they wear rain gear. They're wringing wet from the sweat.
They
just are a hardworking, tough job. And their life's in danger every minute. You know, you have cables over your head. You have trees that are on the ground or around and they roll. So the whole thing's a dangerous game.
Well, it sounds like from everything I've heard and everything I've seen that you folks do a great job of taking care of not just the forest but your people as well. I think that says a lot. You're able to do what you did and get Operator of the Year because of the people that surround you. How many people do you have working?
I think right now we're down to 65. We could use 75 to 80, but you just can't find them.
Yeah.
I used to have 10 log trucks. I run one now. I have a truck sitting because we can't find drivers. We contract out our hauling to Ireland Trucking, which is a great company out of Myrtle Creek. But yes, we have good men around us. My son-in-law, Dan Wagoner, is the best. And, you know, I picked him out for a son-in-law, which is a good thing.
You picked him out.
I introduced him to my daughter. And
you said marry him? Is that what you said?
I didn't exactly say that, but invited the family. The Wagoner family, and after I met Danny and his dad at a basketball game, I went home and told Kay, my wife, let's invite the Wagoners for breakfast on Valentine's Day and tell them to bring the whole family. Because when I met Danny, he popped out from behind his dad with a grin and shook my hand, looked you in the eye, and go, what a nice young man. And the wheels started turning. So We ended up having them up for breakfast at the Driftwood Shores on Valentine's Day and introduced the kids. And then I kind of kept wondering. But next thing I know, they're going together. And I think they've been married 27, 28 years now. Mm-hmm. So I pat myself on the back. What a good job I did picking out a great son-in-law. Along with Danny as the main man in the woods and doing the logging plans, we have another guy named Matt Simmons. And Matt is what we call a side rod who also organizes the different yarders, different equipment on different jobs, what way to log it, because you can log it backwards, go down the hillside different. But it's just technical. Matt's good, Danny's good, and Travis, really key employees. And then all the operators have been with us a long time. Also, I'd say our average guy has been with us over 25 years.
Very good.
Yeah.
Congratulations on this Operator of the Year award on your beavers. I think everybody knows you're a huge beaver fan. And on your birthday. So happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much.
And you have a great day.
Thanks, George.
Keeping your holiday safe. That's the topic with Officer Garrett Littoral next on Our Town.